Hare Krishna. So we continue with the 13th chapter. We've discussed till 13.19. So that was the verse that talked about how one can know me by bhakti. Know about kshetra, kshetrajna, and all these things, jnana and gaya through bhakti. Now, the next section of the Bhagavad Gita is going to talk about prakriti and purusha. So we have, looking at the overview, 2 to 7 talked about kshetra, kshetrajna, 8 to 12 talked about jnana, 13 to 19 talked about gaya. Now 20 to 26 will talk about prakriti and purusha. So let's look at, this is one of the most enigmatic verses of the Gita. The verse after this. This is just a sort of introduction of what is going to come about in this section. Prakritim purusham chaiva, purusham chaiva, vidyanadi ubhavapi, vikaramshigunamshaiva, vidhi prakriti sambhavan. So, prakritim purusham chaiva. So, Krishna is telling over here. Earlier he said that anadi matparam brahma. In 13.13 he said that which is subordinate to me, that brahma is beginningless. Now he adds the interesting thing. He says even prakriti is beginningless. Prakritim purusham chaiva anadi vidhi anadi ubhavapi. Know that both of them are anadi, beginningless. Ubhava means both. And vikaramshi gunam chaiva. So, in this material world, Krishna has told in the 7th chapter, there is matter and spirit. Whatever is existing is a combination of matter and spirit. This is a repeated theme. He has talked about it right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, immediately after Dehinosminita Dehe. 2.14 was Nasatam Sitikshita Bharata. After that was Nasato Vidyate Bhavo, Nabhavo Vidyate Sataha. So, there are these two. So, now Krishna is telling both are eternal. However, we don't see matter as eternal. We see matter as constantly changing. So Krishna says, what is the source of that? Vikaramshi gunam shaiva vidhi prakriti sambhavan. So know that sambhavan means born. The changes and transformations that we see in this world, they are born only from prakriti. So it's interesting that in both the points that Krishna is making, Krishna is using the word vidhi. Vidhi means know. So know that both are eternal, because these points seem often to be counterintuitive. Matter doesn't seem to be eternal to us. Matter seems destructible. So because whenever there is a counterintuitive point, understand this. Know this. Know it this way. So know that matter is also eternal. And then often it does seem as if we are making changes. I am speaking right now. You are hearing. You came from downstairs to upstairs. It's in a sense, it's soul is doing it. However, at the material level, the changes that are happening through the mechanism and the system of material nature. I'll explain this point a little bit when we come to the next verse. The next verse is a little complicated unless we understand the purpose of what Krishna, the context of what Krishna is telling over here. Karya karana kartrutve, karana kartrutve, hetu prakriti ruchyate, hetu prakriti ruchyate, purusha sukha dukkhanam, bhoktrutve hetu ruchyate, bhoktrutve hetu ruchyate. So, the translation here may seem to be a little confusing. So, karya karana kartrutve. So now, normally in our day-to-day language, we may use the word karya to mean action. Ye karya kar rahe hai. But, and karan, we take, iska karan kya hai? What is the cause for this? What is the reason for this? So now, in the context of her, karya and karana refer to karana is related to the word karana, that which does, you know. Like the indriyas are also called as karana. Like we have ear and various indriyas are called. So karya karana kartrutve hetu prakriti ruchyate. That means in the material realm, the cause and effect are both material. Karya karana kartrutve hetu prakriti ruchyate. And then So whatever happens in this world, for example, I hit my hand over here. If I hit it heavily, say the glass cracks, and then my hand gets pierced. Or even if my hand doesn't get pierced, the glass cracks and somebody shouts at me, "Why did you break such expensive glass?" I feel hurt by that. That a person feels hurt by that. So now whatever has happened, that has happened in the realm of matter. The cause is material, the effect is material. But purushah sukha dukkhanam bhoktrutve heturuchyate. Bhoktrutve means because of the desire to enjoy, because of the identification with matter, there is sukha and dukkha. So the verse is talking about two distinct things. Whatever happens at the material level has a material cause. It is within the realm of matter, whatever happens in this world. However, what happens within the realm of matter, that produces happiness or distress depending on bhoktrutve, the desire to enjoy. So a simple example is, say there is an India-Pakistan cricket match and there is a last ball, and on the last ball the Indian batsman needs six runs to win and he hits a sixer. So now what has happened is, okay, there was a circular sphere of stone, and there was a rectangular long stick. The two came in contact with either, and that piece of stone went up certain distance away and fell over there. So all that has happened is in the realm of matter, isn't it? A material object came in contact with a material object and went and fell somewhere else. So this is in the realm of matter. But the emotions that come because of this, purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktrutve heturuchyate. So somebody who is in Pakistan, that person becomes devastated. Somebody who is in India becomes elated. Why? Because there is the bhoktrutve, the desire to enjoy. So the point Krishna is making over here is that in the previous verse he said that all changes happen because of matter. So he's elaborating that okay, in the material world the cause is material, the effect is material. That is true. But what happens, the emotions that come to us, they will not be there if matter were all that exists, then there would be no emotions associated with that. The emotions are there because there is consciousness, and the consciousness has the desire to enjoy, bhoktrutve. So in general, this verse is very significant for understanding how modern science works and how modern science is also incomplete. You know, science progresses based on the assumption that all material cause effects should have material causes. And scientists say that if there is any material effect for which we bring in a non-material or supernatural or spiritual cause, then we are not doing science. Why do they say like that? Because, say, a few hundred years ago, if there was a disease called plague. Now, people believed at that time that this plague is caused by some ghosts or some spirits or some witches haunting. People had various beliefs of why diseases came up. So now, this is what the scientists argue, that if it were true that if scientists had accepted that diseases have supernatural causes, then as soon as we bring anything supernatural into the field of science, scientists say that there is a progress stopper. Because we can't find any further cause. If we know that, okay, there is a particular germ which causes the disease, then we can find out what is the germ, how does it infect the person, how can we kill that germ and cure the person, or how can we find a vaccine by which the germ will not infect only. So the whole sphere of preventive and curative medicine comes up only because science assumed that a material effect will have a material cause. And if science assumes that, okay, for a material effect we have to have a spiritual cause, then by that assumption scientific progress will stop. And that is why scientists argue that against the design argument. They say that, okay, this world is existing and there is a certain order, a certain pattern in this world. But if we ascribe that pattern to God, then by that we are stopping scientific progress. Because we can't find out the material mechanism by which things are happening. And if we can't find out the material mechanisms, then we can't replicate them. We can't control them. We can't modify them. And therefore, we can't progress in our understanding of nature. So now, even when God acts at the material level, you know, God can very well create the very laws and systems by which the actions at the material level take place. So the two ideas that everything material needs to have a material cause, and something material can be caused by something non-material, these two are not necessarily contradictory. You know, even a non-material cause can act through a material mechanism. What does that mean? A non-material cause can act through a material mechanism? Right now I am speaking and you are hearing. So if we look at the scientific explanation for this, you know, you can always go backward. Okay, I'm speaking, that means my tongue is moving, my voice box is producing some sounds. Why is the voice box producing some sounds? Okay, because you go backward, and you find in the brain that certain areas are activated. And if certain areas are activated, then that causes the tongue and the mouth to move in particular ways. But then you go backward. Now, when I am speaking something and you are hearing something, that produces certain emotions. You know, you may be feeling bored by what I am speaking. Somebody may be feeling, this is all, what has this got to do with Bhagavad Gita? Now, are we studying science or are we studying Bhagavad Gita? Somebody may be feeling that this is all getting very taxing. But if, yeah, this is very interesting. So all of you are having some different responses to this. Now, these responses in and of themselves are entirely unnecessary. Unnecessary means, if my function was just survival, you know, if for example, we talked early in the morning about Annamaya Pranamaya Kosh. So if all of us are just the products of Darwinian evolution, and the function of life, the highest virtue of existence is survival, and all of us are designed to survive alone, then emotions don't really play any positive role in survival. Somebody may say, okay, pain protects us. When there is pain, it protects. That's okay. But there are many other emotions which don't protect. Many emotions harm us. Now, a moth, it feels attraction towards fire. And because of that emotion of attraction, the moth burns and dies. Or sometimes people feel some feelings of chivalry or patriotism. And somebody feels chivalry and a person is drowning and somebody just jumps into the river to save the drowning person. So if survival were the rule, then I wouldn't risk my life. So the point which I am making is, if from the material point of view, just maintaining our existence is the goal, and emotions are entirely unnecessary for the purpose of existence, they can neither be explained nor are they needed for the purpose of survival. So, what Krishna is explaining over here, what scientists say is correct from the first part of this verse. That yes, material causes, material effects will have material causes. The material realm, in a sense, is causally complete. Every material effect can be traced back to a material cause. We agree with that point. But that doesn't describe the event completely. Because whatever happens, if there are conscious beings involved, there are emotions involved in it. And where do those emotions come from? Bhoktrutve. And for the desire for Bhoktrutve, there has to be consciousness. So there is Purusha and there is Prakriti. And among both of these, there is a constant interaction. So every change that happens in Prakriti, that has a cause in Prakriti, that has an effect in Prakriti. And that system is causally complete. Causally complete means you can find out from the effect the cause, and from the cause you can reach to the effect. In fact, that is what enables science to have its predictive power. Because matter works according to certain laws. But along with that, there are emotions and there is consciousness. So that comes from Bhoktrutve. And that Bhoktrutve is there because there is Prakriti. There is beyond the Prakriti, there is Purusha. So, is this point clear or it's too complex what I'm trying to say? So Krishna says, so another example I'll give you. Suppose somebody is in a pond. That person is swimming. It's a small pond. And when that person is swimming, that person is just tossing away the, say he's moving his hands and legs. And the waves are moving away from that person. Now the waves will go to the bank of the pond, the corners of the pond. It's a small pond. And then the waves will come back to that person. So now, when that person is moving the hands and moving the legs and setting off those waves, so at that time, certain waves are being set off and certain waves are coming back. Now these are both happening in the pond. So there is this physical hand which is coming in contact with the physical water, and that is setting off certain actions and producing certain reactions. But along with that, there are certain emotions. If the water, if the person is feeling cold, if the water is cold and the person is freezing, then that person may be moving his hands and legs to try to get some heat circulating in the body. But as the water comes back, the person may feel all the more cold. Or if the person is just coming out from a hot weather and has entered the river, pond, then he may find that cold as relief giving. So the point which I am making over here is, whatever happens in the pond, it has a material cause and a material effect. Setting off the waves and getting back the waves. But along with that, there are certain emotions. So those emotions are because of the Purusha. So the same verse comes in the 8th canto also, almost identical verse. Now Krishna will talk about how does this bhoktrutve, how does this situation where the Purusha comes in Prakriti and tries to enjoy happen? So here Krishna is talking about Purusha. Now again, the Purusha can refer to the Jiva and can refer to the Paramatma. So here he is referring to the Jiva. And that will become clear in the next, one of the next verses. Purusha Prakriti Sthohi. Bhungte Prakriti Jan Gunan. E Prakriti Jan Gunan. Karanam Guna Sangosya. Sadasadyoni Janmasu. So, Purushah Prakriti Sthohi. So, Krishna is saying, the Purusha has become situated in Prakriti. Sthohi, situated in Prakriti. For what purpose? Bhungte. Because of the desire to enjoy. Prakriti Jan Gunan. The products of material nature. Prakriti Jan Gunan. The products which are born of Prakriti, which are modified, colored, shaped, made alluring by gunas. And because of this, karanam guna sangosya, because of the association with these modes, the soul gets sad asad yoni janmasu. The soul goes through various species. So we discussed this example earlier of virtual reality. Person playing a video game or strapping himself to a virtual reality setup experiences emotions within that virtual reality setup, although there's nothing happening to that person. So that is exactly a precise example for this. You know, when a person sits in front of a virtual reality set and starts getting absorbed in it. So because of that desire to enjoy that virtual reality setup, the video game or whatever is there in it, that person gets enamored, gets engrossed, and then experiences happiness when there is victory and it is misery when there is loss. So similarly, bhungte prakriti jan gunan. So the soul desires to enjoy matter. The soul is distinct from the body, but the soul identifies with the body and wants to enjoy what the body offers. And because of this desire to enjoy, the soul goes through everything that the body subjects it to. You know, the body comes as a package. And in that package, we can't just have the enjoyable part. There is some enjoyment in it. But along with that, there is misery also. Sad asad yoni janmasu. Now this is a very important verse. This verse our acharyas have called it to be the bija vakya. The bija of the last six chapters. Bija means the seed. Now, we know that the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita talks about the upside down banyan tree. Urdhamulamadashakam. So now, every tree has a seed from which it grows. So the seed that gives rise to material existence is the enjoying mentality. And that is talked about in this verse. So, bhungte, or previous verse it was bhoktrutve, same thing. That enjoying mentality is what causes the soul to become entangled in matter, and when it gets entangled in matter, the whole tree of material existence sprouts thereof. Okay? Now, after describing this, Krishna will say that there is another Purusha also. So, till now there might have been confusion about Atma, but here things become clear. Upadrishtanumantacha Bharta Bhokta Maheshwarah Bharta Bhokta Maheshwarah Paramatme Tichapyokto Paramatme Tichapyokto Dehesmin Purusha Para Dehesmin Purusha Para. So, here Krishna is talking about a Purushah Paraha. So, there is a Purusha, there is a person, there is a being that is Paraha, that is transcendental. Now, is this referring to the same Purusha which is talked about in the previous verse? There is no explicit verse which says Anya, that is somebody else. But if we look at it, the characteristics of this Purusha and look at the characteristics that are described in the previous Purusha, there is a radical discontinuity between the two. The previous Purusha, it was described, that Purusha is Bhungte, wants to enjoy, and that Purusha is subjected to something, Sad Asad Yoni Janmasu. Whereas this Purusha is, what is it described to be? Is Upadrishta Anumantacha. He's overseer and sanctioner. The earlier Purusha was actually the participant come victim. He was not the overseer or the sanctioner. He was acting and getting the reactions to whatever was happening to him. And then Bharata Bhokta Maheshwara. He is again, to make it very clear, he is in charge of the situation. Maheshwara. He's the great controller. He's the Bharata, he's the Bhokta. And his name is Paramatma. So this is a very critical, this is the only verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the compound Paramatma is used to address someone. Paramatma will come. It will come in 13th chapter, it has come in the 6th chapter also. The two words Param and Atma may come together. But Paramatmeti Chapya Ukto. Ukto means it is named or is called. So it's a very clear that this particular being, who is the overseer and the controller, who is the enjoyer, the maintainer and the sanctioner, who is the transcendental person in the body, that is known as Paramatma. So the attributes that are described for this particular Purusha indicate that this Purusha is above Prakriti. This Purusha is in control of Prakriti. And what does this Purusha do? If the primary function is Upadrishta Anumantacha, is overseer and sanctioner. And if you look at it, what Krishna has told earlier, Upadrishta is very related both in semantically and etymologically to what Krishna has talked about earlier in 9.10, Maya Adhyakshena Prakritihi. So, Upadrishta and Adhyaksha. So, Adhyaksha actually means Adhi Aksha, to see from above. Upadrishta. Drishta means to drishti, to see. Upa means from above. So the words are both etymology in terms of word roots, and semantically in terms of meaning. They are both very similar. So that means if we put these two together, 9.10 and 13.23, we understand that this is Krishna. However, because Krishna is talking to jnanis, who in this section, he's describing Jnana Yoga. So he is not yet directly describing to them that I am the goal of your ultimate sadhana. Because the jnanis don't want knowledge straight. The jnanis want, if something is given straight to them, they feel this is too easy. How can things be so simple? They need things complex. So Krishna keeps things in a suspense, and actually the progression from jnana to bhakti will be talked about very clearly, explicitly in the 18th chapter. Krishna will 18.49, 52, 50, 51, 52, 53, he will talk about the path of jnana, and then 54, 55, he will talk about how jnana leads to bhakti. in 18.54-55. But here, what he's telling is, yes, if you want to do this analysis of Purusha and Prakriti, understand that there are two Purushas. One is controlled by Prakriti, and the other is the controller of Prakriti. And now, how can one understand all this? Krishna says, first he will tell what is the fruit of understanding all this, and next verse he will tell how one can understand all this. Ya evam vetti purusham prakritim cha gunai saha sarvatha vartamano pi nasabhuyo bhijayate. So ya evam vetti purusham. So now Krishna has told earlier that in 19 he said that I have told you about kshetra, kshetrajna and jnana. So jnana, gaya and kshetra. So now I am telling you, evam vetti purusham prakritim cha gunai sa. One who understands purusha, prakriti and gunai, what will happen to him? Sarvatha vartamanopi. In all situations, that a person nasabhuyo bhijayate. Abhijayate means born. Bhuyo means again. Such a person will not take birth again. So this is not just ordinary knowledge. Understanding Prakriti and the two Purushas can free one from material existence. So how does this happen? You remember the famous two birds metaphor from the Katha Upanishad? You know that there are two birds, and one bird is chewing, trying to enjoy. So that bird is talked about in 13.22. And the other bird is the observing bird. That is talked about in 13.23. And there also it is said that Nishaya Shochiti Muhyamana Jushtam Yada Pashyatyanyamisham Asya Mahimana Mitivita Shokaha. Once this chewing, munching bird understands, turns towards the passive bird, the observing bird, and learns his glories, then he will become free from all misery. Same point. Nasabhuyo Bijayate. The greatest misery in material existence is the cycle of birth and death. Such a person will no longer have to suffer that. So now naturally Arjuna's curiosity is piqued and he wants to know, how can I understand all this? And Krishna will describe in the next two verses. Dhyane natmani pashyanti kechidatmanam atmana Anye sankhena yogena karma yogena chapare. So dhyanen atmani pashyanti. Some people by dhyana can perceive this atma. Kechit atmanam atmana. Some people can perceive this atma by dhyana. So the word atmana refers to mind. Atmanam refers to the dhyanen. So Prabhupada gives a little interesting translation over here. What he says is that one has to understand the super soul. Because you remember the Upanishadic verses, if it turns around and understands that observing bird, he will become free from all misery. So Prabhupada explains over here that dhyanen atmani pashyanti. So he says that within the self, what will one pursue? One will pursue the super soul, atmanam. And how will one pursue that? Atmana, with the mind. The mind turned inwards. Our subtle faculty of perception, when it gets redirected inwards, then one will be able to see it. Through dhyana. That is one way. Other is anye sankhena yogena. Other is by sankhya yoga. Sankhya yoga is analysis of matter and spirit. Gradually by that one will come forward. And then karma yogena chapar. Even by karma yoga, people can come to this level and ultimately perceive. So of course, it is not that will happen directly. One has to progress substantially. But these are alternative ways. Now, Krishna describes three paths in one verse. And then after that, he devotes one full verse for just one path. And there he says, so that is indirectly by the quantity that of text that he is devoting to that, it indicates that actually he recommends this verse. And this will become clear later in the Bhagavad Gita. Correct. Sankhya is more or less equivalent to jnana. There are some technical differences between Sankhya and Jnana, but more or less it's similar. Generally, Sankhya, as it is commonly understood in the outside world, it is just analysis of matter. But Sankhya, when it is done properly, then it analyzes matter and then it goes beyond matter to perceive what is there beyond matter. And then it comes to the soul and the super soul. Correct. That's Bhag. Okay, now in the six darshanas, is it the Sankhya that doesn't reveal God only? So actually, according to our acharyas, the Kapila Sankhya is the actual Sankhya. Yeah, so Kapila. But how it is that the word Sankhya is one word which refers to many things. In the sense that many people think that the Sankhya which has been taught by Kapila, and then later on there was a teacher, Ishvara Krishna, who wrote a book called Sankhya Karika, which has become a classic in the study of Sankhya. So all this is often thought to be non-theistic. It is just analysis of matter to go beyond matter. So that way, that Sankhya, our understanding, our Acharya's understanding is that actually that is a deviant offshoot of the original Sankhya that is given by Kapil Dev. So what Kapil Dev gave is considered the most authentic Sankhya. That is one of the Shaddarshanas. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the Shaddarshan is during like 2000 BC. Yes, correct. Sankhya and Yoga. Mimamsa. Yeah. Correct, correct. So basically, the six darshanas, Sutra Maharaj has written a book about these Shaddarshanas, where he explains the Shaddarshanas as they have been understood traditionally by the Vaishnava Acharyas. And that basically they were progressive schools of thought which gradually culminated in Vedanta. But over the centuries, they became not... Well, they are given the Veda. They are based on the Vedas. So in that sense, they are also, in a sense, eternal. In the sense that actually... No, actually, these Shaddarshanas are talked about in Vedanta Sutra also. And they are critiqued. So that Mimamsa is critiqued. Sankhya is critiqued. And Vedanta is established. That's why it's called Vedanta Sutra. So that means these Shaddarshanas were present at the time of the compilation of Vedanta Sutra also. So that means they were 500,000 years ago. Our acharyas consider Vedanta Sutra to be 5,000 years old. So therefore, they have been there. They are basically partial understandings of the Vedas. So it's an elaborate subject. I have given a class separately on these six systems. But basically, the point is that when one starts and starts looking for the absolute truth, what is that absolute truth? I'm explaining what is partial. So, when one starts looking at the absolute truth, one wants to know what exactly is there in this world. So then one starts looking around and one says, okay, this world is there around me. What is this world made of? I start analyzing. Okay, I look, all these attractive forms are there, but they are ultimately made of some basic elements. So when I dissect matter into its foundational elements, that way actually I am getting a deeper perception of matter. That is the first step in observation. That is called a Sankhya. I look at matter and look at its foundational elements, at its building blocks, in terms of discrete elements. Now if I go further and look at the building blocks of each of these elements also, then I come to the molecular level of understanding of matter. See, basically in Western thought, there have been two ways of looking at matter. There is the elemental theory of matter and the molecular theory of matter. Elemental theory means the world is made up of different elements. Everything that is there in matter is made of different elements. Molecular theories, ultimately even these elements are made of certain molecules which ultimately are made of atoms and electrons and protons, like that. So, Vaisheshika is the molecular theory of matter. You go further and then you find, okay, the elements are also made of matter. Then after that, when one starts perceiving further, one starts thinking, okay, this whole matter is there, but there must be some, this whole matter is functioning in quite a cohesive way. So how is it actually functioning? Then one understands that there are certain laws that are making it function, and there are certain devatas who are in charge of the laws. So by performing certain yajnas, one can cause matter to function in the ways that we want. means I want rains. By doing some yagyas, I can get rains. So that using certain knowledge to make matter behave in certain way, that is mimamsa, karma mimamsa. I'm coming to that room, please. So karma mimamsa is the idea that we can control matter by certain mechanisms which can be triggered by certain mantras. Then beyond that, one starts thinking, okay, I'll control matter, but what after that ultimately? All matter is temporary. Even if I gain control by matter, even if I get prosperous crops, even if I get many children, even if I get good health, ultimately I'm going to die. So there has to be something beyond that. So when one starts inquiring beyond that, then one comes to yoga, where one has said there is something beyond which I have to connect with. And so yoga is largely a matter of praxis. Praxis means practice. Okay, how can I perceive, how can I regulate my body and mind so that I can perceive that absolute truth? And then when one goes deep into that absolute truth and understands what is the final absolute truth, that is Vedanta. So I start looking at matter and go into its elemental component, that is Sankhya. I look at its molecular component, that is Vaisheshika. I look at the ways to control matter, that is Mimamsa. I look beyond, start looking beyond matter, that is Yoga. And when I understand what is the ultimate truth, the Brahman that is beyond matter, that is Vedanta. Now, Nyaya was like the foundation for all this. Nyaya basically means logic. So ultimately, in any school of thought, I have to do certain kind of reasoning by which I can understand things. So Nyaya originally was meant to offer principles for logic and reasoning that could be used by all schools of thought. But over a period of time, each of these were progressive schools of thought. And Nyaya offered principles for all the schools of thought. But over a period of time, instead of remaining progressive schools of thought, all of them became competitive schools of thought. That means Sankhya became its own school of thought, Mimamsa became its own school of thought, Vaisheshika also became its own school of thought. Similarly, Nyaya also evolved as an independent school of thought. And that means Nyaya is the idea only those things that can be understood by logic, they are the real. Anything that cannot be understood by logic is false. So actually, you know, logic in spirituality should have the ministerial role, not a magisterial role. What is the difference between the ministerial and a magisterial role? Minister means one who assists us. There is a king and there is a minister who assists. Whereas magisterial means the magistrate, one who rules. So reason should have which role? A ministerial role, not a magisterial role. So the error in Nyaya, and the error to some extent even in modern science, is that reason is given a magisterial role. Nyayikas as well as modern rationalists, they think that if you adopt scripture, then you are just giving up reason completely. We are not giving up reason, but we are acknowledging that there are things which are beyond the reach of reason also. So we use reason, but we subordinate to and harmonize it with revelation. So reason has a ministerial role, not a magisterial role. Okay, we can discuss about the six systems maybe separately. You know, we want to focus on what we are discussing right now here. So now Krishna will describe an alternative way, and this is, although he doesn't use the word bhakti explicitly over here, this is actually the path of bhakti. He is talking about hearing. Anye tvaiva majanantaha, tvaiva majanantaha, shrutvanye bhyaupasate, te pichati taranteva, taranteva, mrityum shruti parayanaha. So anye means others. So he has talked about three kinds of people who follow different paths. Anye tu eva majanantaha. They actually don't know anything about this. Ajanantaha they are. So ajananta is different from avajananti, which was talked about in 9.11. Avajananti mamuda. They are ajanantaha. When they hear, shrutva anyebhya, they hear from some others. And then when they hear about the Paramatma, what do they do? Upasate. They start worshipping. And by that worship, Krishna gives a remarkable result. He says, Te api chati taranteva mrityum. They go beyond mrityu. And what is their qualification? Shruti parayanaha. They are eager to hear. So by their eagerness to hear, they go beyond the material existence. So what is this? Actually, this is the process of bhakti. You know, this emphasis on shruti parayanaha, on hearing, is not there in any other path as much as it is in the path of bhakti. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that verses practically applicable to modern society, because there is no education in spiritual matter. That means people are ajanantaha. And the process of hearing is strongly recommended. This is very appropriate. So, faithful hearing from an authority person will help one transcend the material existence and go back home, back to Godhead. Now, here Krishna has completed more or less the answer to Arjuna's questions. He has talked about Purusha Prakriti and he has talked about how to get knowledge of Purusha and Prakriti. But still, you know, he has talked about so many concepts. How do all those concepts fit together? That's what he will talk in the last section. So 27 to 35 is the last section, which is bringing together or coalescing a coherent harmonizing of all that has come earlier. Yavat sanjayate kinchet sattvam sthavara jangamam kshetra kshetrajna sanyogat Tadviddhi Bharatarshabha. So, he first starts by revising what he is saying earlier. Actually, whatever you see in this world, Arjuna, Yavat, whatever, Sattvam and Sthavar Jangama, moving and non-moving, it is made up of two things, Kshetra and Kshetrajna. It is a combination of these two things. Understand, there is nothing beyond this. All living beings are a combination of matter and spirit. Then after that he will describe that if you understand this, then you will develop a equipoised vision. Sat samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishthantam parameshwaram tishthantam parameshwaram vinashyatsvan vinashyantam ya pashyati sa pashyati. So samam sarveshu bhute, such a person sees all living beings equally. Tishthantam Parameshwaram. Now this is a situation where these verses, different acharyas have said that this, here this, the Atma being referred to or the Paramatma being referred to. So actually the Ishvara, even the Atma to some extent is the Ishvara of the body, although it's not a supreme Ishvara. So now the word Parameshwara can refer to the Supreme Lord. If we take Parameshwara to be one word, then there's Parameshwar. But Parama Ishvara, if you take them as two separate words, then it can also refer to the Ishvara who is Para. So even the Atma in a sense is Para. It's not currently Para, but if you are talking from the perspective of a Jnani, he understands the Atma is transcendental. So in that sense, this can also refer to the soul. But that's a Prabhupada. Different as Samacharyas have said that the soul and the super soul, so Prabhupada brings neither the soul nor the super soul. So he says that actually he sees all living beings equally, because he sees that the Supreme Lord is situated in all living beings. And then he understands that both soul and the super soul within the body are indestructible. The body is destructible, but they are indestructible. Yaha pashyati sa pashyati. This is a common phrase which comes in the scriptures, which indicate that one who sees like this is actually the seer. Otherwise one is not actually seeing. Samam pashyanti sarvatra. Samavastitam Ishwaram. Samavastitam Ishwaram. Nahi nastyatmanatmanam. Tato yati param gatim. Tato yati param gatim. So if one can see in this equal way, Krishna tells Arjuna, then nahi nastyatmanatmanam. The mind will not be able to degrade such a person. because the mind degrades us by creating dualities. This is good, this is bad. This is male, this is female. This is honorable, this is dishonorable. So it creates dualities at the material level, and that's how the mind makes us averse to something and attached to something. That's how it entangles us. But if you can have this vision of equality, nahi nasty atmanatmanam, the soul will never get degraded by the mind. And then the soul stays steady like this, then the soul will become liberated. Tato yati param gatim. Now, Krishna will talk about prakriti. So now he has talked about kshetra kshetra again in the beginning. Now we will talk about prakriti. So this is a verse that is similar to 3.27. Prakrityaiva cha karmani kriyamanani sarvashah yapashyati tathatmanam akartaram sapashyati. So prakrityaiva cha karmani, one who sees that actually prakriti is doing everything. Kriyamanani sarvashah, this is very same to prakriti kriyamanani gudi sarvani sarvashah. So there the meaning is same, but the focus is different. There Krishna says, one who thinks I am the doer, he is a fool. And here he says that one who understands that I am not the doer, he is enlightened. So the emphasis, yapashyati tathatmanam akartaram. One, okay, the prakriti is doing all this, the atma is the akartara. Such a person is sahapashyati. So yapashyati sahapashyati had come in two verses earlier also in 2.28. So same point, yapashyati, one who is actually seer. Yapashyati atmanam akartaram sapashyati. So yah pashyati sapashyati is there here also, but it's distributed over two lines. Now Krishna will talk about this. Okay, if you say I want to see everything equally, but then I see so much diversity in this world, and you look different from me, and I look different from a tiger or a lion or a tree, and all different species look different. So where is this difference coming from? That he explains in the next verse. Yada bhuta prithak bhavam ekastham anupashyati, ekastham anupashyati tata eva cha vistaram brahma sampadyate tada, brahma sampadyate tada. So yada bhuta prithak bhavam, there is prithak bhava, there is variety in matter, but within that variety one understands there is oneness. Beyond the variety, one sees beyond the variety to the harmony, to the unity, to the similarity. Ekastham anupashyati, and one understands that from one unity, what is that unity? There is the soul, there is the super soul, they are all of the spiritual nature. But from there, this variety, tad eva cha vistaram, one understands that all this variety has come from that spiritual similarity. Brahma sampadyate tada, such a person will attain Brahman realization. Brahma sampadyate. Now Krishna will talk about how the soul interacts with matter. So you try to see how the flow is going. First he said that, okay, there are only two things, matter and spirit. Then he says, one, you should learn to see this equally, see everything material equally, then you will not get entangled in material existence. Then he says, okay, you can see activity in this world, but that activity is only caused by matter. The soul is not the doer. So first is observation, see equality. Then after that is my own action. When I am acting, I understand I am not the doer, it's matter which is acting. And then I talk about all the variety that is there, that is happening because at the foundation there is similarity, but that soul acts in particular ways which creates variety. So how that happens is the last part of this chapter. Anaditva nirgunatvat paramatma yam avyayah paramatma sharirasthopi kaunteya nakaroti na lipyate. So anadi, this atma is anadi, the atma is nirguna, is transcendental, and paramatma yam avyaya, so this can again refer to the soul or the super soul depending on how we split the word. Avyaya is imperishable, and here very important point, he is shariirasthopi, he is in the body. Krishna has talked about in 13.2 prakriti sthohi, same point, shariirasthopi, he's in the prakriti, in the sharira, but na karoti na lipyate. So now the next two verses will be an elaboration of this last line. how the Atma is in the body, but it is na karoti and na lipyate. Krishna gives two examples for it. First, he gives an example for na lipyate, and then he gives the example for na karoti. So this whole, as I said, this whole verse is, the whole section is bringing everything together. So first he will use the same word lipyate over here that was there earlier. Na lipyate. So yatha sarvagatam saukshmyad akasham nopalipyate akasham nopalipyate sarvatravasthito dehe travasthito dehe tathatmanopalipyate tathatmanopalipyate. So yatha sarvagatam saukshmyad, although the ether, the akash, is present everywhere, the akash doesn't get contaminated by contact with matter. The ether is present everywhere, doesn't get contaminated. And similarly, this Atma can go into all possible situations. Atma can be in the body of a hog, the Atma can be in the body of a human being, the Atma can be in a degraded or elevated body. But the Atma doesn't get entangled. Na lipyate. Na lipyate. But then you say that actually, if ether is there everywhere, ether doesn't influence matter. Okay, in the emptiness of space, ether is present. But ether is not influencing the table, ether is not influencing the walls. Whereas the Atma, when he is present in the body, the Atma influences the body. Isn't it? Because of the presence of the Atma, the body acts. How is that possible? If you are saying that it is na lipyate, that's okay, if it's like ether. But ether doesn't act, whereas the Atma produces certain results in the body. So how that happens, for that Krishna will give the next example. Yatha prakashayatyekah krutsnam lokamimam ravihi krutsnam lokamimam ravihi kshetram kshetri tatha krutsnam prakashayati bharata prakashayati bharata. So he says, just as the sun is present in one place, but the sun illuminates the vastness of the sky, and the sun is far away from the earth, but by its presence the sun stimulates the growth of vegetation over here. The sun causes activity to happen over here. Similarly, the Atma is different from the body, but the Atma animates the body with consciousness and causes activity to happen over here. So although activity happens over on the earth because of the sun, the sun is not directly the doer. The sun doesn't get directly entangled over here. Similarly, although activity happens at the bodily level because of the presence of the Atma, but the Atma doesn't become entangled. Now, what does it mean, Atma doesn't become entangled? Actually, here Krishna, when he's putting it all together, what he has taught in this chapter, he's putting it all together not just in a theoretical sense, but also in an applicational sense. He's saying that one who understands all this, When he lives with this vision, such a person will na lipyate. He will na karoti and so na lipyate. He will not actually be the doer of anything, and that's why he will not become bound. So in that sense, this philosophical vision is setting the scene for Arjuna to act in a war. Yes, once you understand that actually the Kauravas and Pandavas should not see any difference with them at the level of the soul, they are all similar. So you should see what is your duty and act accordingly. That if you are acting in that way, based on enlightened understanding of who you are and what you are meant to do, then na karoti na lipyate. You will not get bound. And Krishna will say, not only will you not, na lipyate means you will not get entangled. Not getting entangled is one thing. Getting liberated is another thing. It's like saying, you know, okay, if you do this, you won't fall sick. That's fine, but my goal is not just to not fall sick. I want to become healthy. So what is the? How will that happen? Krishna says that by this vision, action in this vision will even lead to liberation. That was the last verse of this chapter. Kshetra kshetra gyayo revam antaram jnana chakshusha jnana chakshusha bhuta prakriti moksham cha timokshamcha ye viduryantite param. So one who understands the antara means the difference, the differentiation with jnana chakshu, with the eyes of knowledge. What is this jnana chakshu? What Krishna has described from 27 to 34 till now, that is the jnana chakshu. So one understands this, the difference between matter and spirit, and not just matter and spirit, it is matter and soul and super soul on the other side. Kshetra and Kshetraga. Kshetraga includes soul and super soul. One understands this difference. What will such a person? Bhuta prakriti moksham cha ye vidur. Vidur means to know. Such a person will understand the means of liberation from material existence. And yanti te param. Such a person will gain liberation by that. So Krishna uses the word moksham and then param. So bhuta prakriti moksham cha. So from, if you get moksha from prakriti, the earlier verse we talked, purusha prakriti stohi, you're situated in prakriti, but you'll get moksha from prakriti. And by that, yantite param, one will go to the supreme destination. So bhuta prakriti moksham cha, this refers to verses 25 and 26. Now 25 and 26, Krishna gave two processes. One is, he said, kechit atmanam atmana sankhya yoga, dhyana yoga, karma yoga, and then bhakti yoga, shravanam. So those are the processes. One who adopts these processes, the person will get liberated. And in this way, Krishna not only answers Arjuna's six questions, but he also takes it beyond that, integrating it all into a vision and a plan for action by which one can attain liberation. So thank you very much. We continue the 14th chapter tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Tai Gaur Premanindi. Tomorrow? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada.